CliffCentral.com. If you missed part one, it was really good. There was a lot of reality TV talk. There was some Kanye talking some sense. Yeah, it was really good.
South African invention.
South African invention. That was the thing I missed, Leanne. Thank you so much. Happy Friday. Welcome back, or welcome to it, whichever one it is. Gareth is in New York. Sia is in Cape Town. But Leanne is to my left, my immediate left.
Mm-hmm, right here.
I, of course, am here. Nola's outside talking to Dave Levinson. So basically, that's all you need to put a picture into your mind with. Now you let the words do the rest. Leanne, there was something I wanted to chat about in the first hour, but we ran out of time because it was such a good first hour.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you didn't listen to it, get the podcast. If you did listen to it, I'm probably overhyping it. oh, crap, now I've lost it. The whole Banksy thing, right? Now,
yes.
We didn't really talk about this week. Did you guys talk about it while I was away?
We didn't. I wanted to speak about it yesterday, but we also ran out of time.
So, yeah, so if you didn't know the full story, so Banksy is like this anonymous artist guy. He's obviously a massive legend towards any hipster with a MacBook.
Yeah.
Or just anybody who appreciates some rather unconventional kind of art, street art, whatever it may be. This guy is an enigma. No one knows who he is. There's speculation of who it is. But it's still it's this character.
Yeah, so you'll wake up one day and all of a sudden a big building has been Banksy'd.
Yeah.
He's done his magic, beautiful artwork, and he's now started putting it onto paper as well. And it's becoming very valuable. No one's ever really met him.
Yeah, so there was this exhibition. It was at one of those big auction houses where some old white guy with a pompous sort of accent.
It was the Sotheby's. New Bond Street auction house in London.
Well, there we go. And there was a Banksy girl with balloon in a beautiful frame, very thick frame, very oddly thick frame. And as it got auctioned for just around sort of like $1 million, whatever, something happened. The picture sort of falling out of the frame became a shredder and shredded the piece of work, which
yes.
was so Banksy, obviously. So, I mean, there was such horror. And
he's quite a prankster.
Yeah, there was such horror and dismay that as this was happening because the gavel, is a gavel, huh? That piece
yes,
of wood, the guy.
Or a gavel.
The gavel went down and it was sold to someone, obviously, who, I mean, you can put that much money away in art. Good for them. And there was mass outrage. Like, how can this happen? But obviously, it was a Banksy thing that he never wanted it to be commercial. The fact that one of his pieces went for this much money, it had to be shredded. And then within that became extra art, in my opinion.
So it went for £1.042 million. £1,042,000. And as the hammer came down, they heard this faint alarm which went off in the room.
Yeah.
And shortly after, in front of a room full of gawping faces, the canvas slipped out the frame, being shredded in the process by some concealed machine before being hurriedly taken away by attendants.
Well, that was just it, that he actually built a shredder machine into the frame because the frame was ridiculously large. Anyway, here's a little update on what's going down before I share some more thoughts around this. Oh, Leanne, I'm having a shock here.
You can't blame it on a Monday.
No, no, I'm not blaming anything. I mean, Dave's in the studio now. Thanks, Nola. Pretty sure he said we'll chat to Dave at 7:30, but we're in for an hour. Dave, you know what? I never want to oversell you. I never want to overspread you. I never want to over anything you.
Well, the winning bidder of Banksy's shredded painting has confirmed they will keep it. Girl with Balloon was reduced to shreds last Friday, just moments after it was auctioned by Sotheby's for $1.4 million. The graffiti artist had placed a hidden shredder in the frame. The buyer said they were initially shocked at the stunt, then gradually realized that keeping it meant they would end up with a piece of art history. Sotheby's says Banksy has renamed the artwork Love is in the Bin.
How do they know that? Did Banksy just send an anonymous mail? But the moment this happened, people were saying, oh, but now it's not worth the same, whatever, whatever. It's obviously worth more money now because it's not just that. It's because the art became even more art, if that makes any sense, which I'm sure it doesn't. Because now you're not just going to be, oh, cool, so you got that Banksy picture. It's like, oh, cool, that's the one that he destroyed after you bought it.
Yeah.
So obviously, this is going to be worth, this is probably already worth $2 million. has already escalated quite quickly.
Yeah.
Dave, what's your our take on that?
They should get hold of the VBS bank shredded bank statements from all those guys. That's like real proper South African art.
That's South African art.
If they want shredded stuff, we've got a lot of things, man.
Problem is, Dave.
Old Saxon World bank statements, drink statements from the Shebeen. We've got lots of art.
The problem with art is that rarity drives price. I mean,
the thing with Banksy is that he'll go, if they keep it, he'll do something else. He'll burn the whole gallery down. And then all that's left standing is that piece of art.
Or an actual girl holding a balloon.
story is, a friend of mine, Martin Evans, has a friend in London who's got a Banksy piece. But he won't say who it is and he won't say where it is because if, as soon as he says it, generates interest.
Yeah.
He can't insure it. So he can't even say he's got it. But it was also a trick thing in a gallery where they said, come to the gallery there. And they didn't say where it was. So behind a tile, there was a loose tile on the floor. And he took the tile, and behind the tile is the picture.
Hmm.
So he's got it, but he can't say he's got it.
Well, you just ruined it for him now, Dave, haven't you?
No, well, he doesn't. You don't know who it is. It's not Martin Evans because he's a poor comedian.
Yeah, Dave, I'm very excited about the running order today.
We're supposed to go at 7:30. We peaked. Hello, Leanne.
Hi.
I've only seen you on my radio.
This is true.
You get to meet Leanne, which is obviously...
Oh, yeah, I know. I still love my tipple.
Cats.
I've got vodka in my iced tea. Four cats at home. Yeah.
I make beer if you need some.
Yeah, nice. Dave, and we'll definitely get
into
that.
Where did we go? So, the Banksy, hey?
Yeah. Well, it was a big story, crazy. But like I do believe that we'll get more out of the story, but I reckon that that's...
Have you seen the graffiti price. People do in Cape Town or Joburg? They try and copy it, and it kind of ends up being Banksy. It's just not... it's not as relevant, and not as... the irony is brilliant in this stuff.
Because
yeah. he gets it. He says straight up, "This is what's happening in your world, and have a look at this." So he'll separate the confusion. These big fat cats are taking money. He has a picture, and you're like, "Oh, okay, I get it."
Mm.
But I do think like he, I mean, it's a very strange
he
world.
He could be a girl.
I'm gonna go with it being a he, because well, I'm just I'm so, that, some that's of my heavy. Guess. that's my guess, Dave. That's my guess. But it must be a fascinating existence to know that you. Obviously, you can never be completely solitary in life, right? You can't just be you. Mm-hmm. So someone knows who you are and someone knows your secret. But like, do you ever have that temptation to say, okay, cool, I've had a good laugh, I'm Banksy?
So imagine how solid his ego is that he doesn't need that.
Good point, Dave. That's why I brought it up. Because the moment he says that, he loses everything he's worked for.
Oh.
And we all think that because we need attention because we're normal people. But just imagine being in a position where you don't actually need the attention.
Don't need the attention.
And you don't want to ever have
it. So solid in recognition. Yourself.
And that guy, he could put some artwork out there and make a quick $50 million probably. If he were to, say, monetize who he is. But
that would take away the reason why he's doing it.
That would lose
Because a lot of that graffiti obviously does in places where it will be taken down by law the next hour. So that's what makes it so cool, is that the authorities have to...
It's like even Snapchat.
Even that guy spraying it from the fire department has that special ink that sprays over these graffiti things. He's crying because it's really brilliant art.
Yeah.
But he does it. He wouldn't... There are graffiti areas where you can paint, where you and I can go paint. But he does it in the place where you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
And always Naughty Banksy. Always on the cover of night as well.
The undercover of night.
Yeah.
Where most crimes are committed.
So, you know...
broad daylight. They stole my thing in broad daylight. They took my smash and grab in broad daylight.
Yeah, that's only really here. So, you know, Melania had her trip to Africa recently.
She didn't come to Sandton.
She's still here? She's still in Africa?
She's a big...
No, I don't think
big
so.
Big Cliff Central watcher.
Well, I know. I mean, yeah. She didn't want to come down here because, you know, we've been saying things about Donald, and Donald doesn't want extra attention. So, while Melania was dressed like a colonial tourist from circa 1864... She was a helmet. I mean, like, she rocks it. I mean, she rocks the outfit. She really is. She's probably like a wardrobe of the world that Donald bought her a while back.
And also, why and Africa? Like, did they spin the globe? And say, yeah. I want to go somewhere, Donald. Well, spin the globe and choose a place.
Like, Donald, I haven't worn pith helmet. She's like, okay, cool.
Does she have an accent? Africa. I've never heard her speak.
Well, here she is talking about bullying, because you know she's very anti-bullying, and she talks about the whole Me Too thing.
So what it's like to be bullied by Donald.
Well, exactly, Dave. She's in the front line, perhaps. Although, who knows what their relationship's like? There's no point speculating on things like that. So she's a big advocate for anti-bullying. And while in Africa, she was she got sat down and interviewed by people who actually wanted to know more about things other than just her outfit.
The movement, though, do you believe in them? Do you support the Me Too movement?
I support the women, and they need to be heard. we need to support them. And, you know, also men, not just women.
Do you think men in the news that have been accused of sexual assault, sexual harassment, have been treated unfairly?
Well, someone's fishing here, huh?
Just every general man in the news.
But she's now that I've heard her accent, I recognize that accent from somewhere and I can't put my finger on it. But it's definitely one of the strippers I spoke to at the Grand.
Oh, dear.
See, Nolo, that same accent.
You see, Nolo, that's why I said, could we bring Dave in at 7:30? No, let's just do everything that Ben says, but not.
How come the bank phones me when I spend 6,000 rand at the Grand, but they don't phone that guy when he takes 15 million out of the bank? Dave, like Rekord.
These are all fair points we'll get to in a bit. Right. Let's get back to Melania.
You need to have a really hard evidence that, you know, that if you're accused of something, show the evidence.
Some women might hear that and say, how could you say that, Mrs. Trump? You need to stand with women. What would you say?
I do stand with women, but we need to show the evidence.
You gotta love mainstream media, hey? You must stand with women. Melania's making a perfectly salient,
it's not a bad point.
Salient point here about the fact that there must be facts and that kind of stuff. Because what is this mob? So now it's like, so going back to the Kanye thing, like, you must stand with black people. You must say exactly what other black people are saying. And this guy is literally, he's saying here, you must stand with women, regardless of anything. That sounds a bit immature to me. I mean, here's a woman who's just trying to be objective about something and be the, she's not the floaters, she's a floaters. First lady of, yes. She's just trying to be a floaters and be, like, you know, sensible. And this guy's giving her gears about, no, you must stand with women.
You cannot just say to somebody, I was, you know, sexually assaulted, and or you did that to me, or, because sometimes the media goes too far, and the way they portray some stories, it's not correct. It's not right.
What happened to you personally, or what did you see personally that you thought you wanted to tackle this issue?
I could say I'm the most bullied person on the world.
You think you're the most bullied person in the world?
One of them, if you really see what people are saying about me.
The one who has the most control over Donald Trump is Melania, 100%. Is that true?
Oh, I wish. I give him my honest advice and honest opinions, and then he does what he wants to do.
Sources have told us, sources in the White House, that you are the gatekeeper. That you tell him who he can trust and who he can't trust. Is that true?
Yes, I give him my honest advice.
He's been in office now almost 2 years. Has he had people that you didn't trust working for him?
Yes.
Did you let him know?
I let him know.
And what did he do?
Well, some people, they don't work there anymore. And it's very difficult sometimes because I'm so busy with my office, I don't get involved with West Wing.
Do you think there's still people there that he can't trust?
Yes.
Still working now?
Yes.
Your husband most likely will run for re-election. Are you looking forward to possibly 6 more years in the White House?
I believe that my husband is doing an incredible job for this nation. And I want that American people have a success. So whatever he will decide, I will support him.
But are you looking forward to it?
I'm enjoying it. I really love to live in the Washington and in the White House. And yes, I'm enjoying it.
Good on you, Melania.
I find she's quite calm under pressure.
She is. Yeah. But just be,
that's not training. That's natural.
No, Dave, that's bullying. After many years being bullied.
And getting stronger. But you know what's weird? Was that interview in Africa?
Yes, there was.
There's no Afrocentric questions. Nothing. No, what are you doing here?
It's all about her.
She's throwing so much light on real issues within Northern, Central, wherever she was, they could have asked her about those things, water, health, all these things, and they're going, well, you're not even here. Let's talk about that.
Dave, to be fair,
they don't get the chance to be with her.
To be fair, that was a snippet from the interview. That wasn't
okay. Cool. They may have spoken other things.
Yeah, I mean, they could have spoken about a whole bunch of other things.
You snippeted me.
Yeah, well, I think you snippeted yourself.
I was snippeted at 3 days old.
Dave,
Leanne's laughing. She gets me, Ben.
No, Dave, I get you. I get you every Friday, and I absolutely love you. How is the beer business going anywhere?
You know what's weird? I don't have a beer business. Not so it's quite weird. I took some beers to my mom. She lives in a what do you call it? A home, friendly home,
care home.
No, it's like a happy home. They're not finished yet. They still got some life. What do you call that? Retirement village.
It's a care facility.
They got better DSTV than me and you, but I took some there for the peeps. And it's quite amazing how they all suddenly became beer aficionados after taking three or four sips. You don't do that when you drink a castle. And yet when you say to someone, this is a craft beer, they all start having their opinions. And I'd explain to them the difference between a brand and a brewery.
Yeah.
So I've got a brand. I don't sit there in my gumboots and actually make the beer. I've got a brand that I've started and I've worked through it. So she said, can I have your top-selling beer, one of the old ladies? And I said, no, that's not for sale. You're getting it for free. Just shut up and drink it. There's no sales.
I would love to see the actual visual proof of you going into care facilities and flogging
I'm trying to get into their wills. I think it's a cool thing. You just friendly hang around with these old ducks, and then they'll eventually, you'll get something in the will at least. And I leave this to Dave.
Do you know of anyone who's had success in this field, or are you trying to pioneer?
It's a very pioneer thing, yeah. I think the Alzheimer's patients are hectic because you don't really know if they remember you, so you've got to just keep going back. It's hectic, man. Probably not legal.
Also, you get a chance to make a great first impression every single time.
That's it.
Or if you don't make a good one, you can make it the second time.
They're just so happy to see me. But it's a pioneer thing. It's nothing. I don't want everyone to start doing it now. Please. Don't do this.
Okay,
it's my idea.
Back off. So you've just been to the Clarence Comedy Festival. Now, that to me just sounds like a beer weekend. It's an actual comedy festival.
Well, they do have their most successful thing is their Clarence.
Well, yeah, because Clarence sounds like a fascinating part of the
March,
country.
March, February.
So that's in the Free State. What, it's like 4-hour drive from Joburg?
Two.
Yeah. Even closer.
Closer.
Oh,
it's become like a bit of a Joburg jewel place for your families because they're getting better. 4 or 5 years ago, they didn't really understand what they were doing. So it was like Pilgrim's Rest back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
But Clarence is the size of a small shopping center, the place, the little town. Then it's just a whole lot of B&Bs, and then everyone's sort of seen the opportunity. So there's a knife-making course that you can do it for the day. You forge your own metal knife, and then at the end of the day, you've got a knife.
That's brilliant.
They're bringing out the whole vibe of it, like the way that things were done, craft. A lot of antique shops, beautiful restaurants that you would not find. There's one called Clementine's. It's fully booked. For the rest of the year, till 2019. We wanted to do the comedy there, and the lady said, to be honest, we don't need... The comedy brings in revenue for a place, for the quiet nights. She said, we don't need the comedy. We're cool. We're done. And the restaurant's owned by the cat. It's in the cat's name.
I thought that sounded like a cat's
name.
That's
so nice.
Oh, man.
But like this whole Clarence Comedy Festival thing sounded like quite a big deal. Of course, you were there. Three of the 12 Goliaths were there. Kakisa Ladija was there, Nina Hastie.
All three of them were there. Actually, the only one that wasn't there was Kate, the one that's in charge of them.
Okay.
The whip.
Luisa Madinga, he's the Daily Show guy, right?
Daily Show African conspirator. What do you call that? Contractor.
Contributor?
Contributor?
Conspirator.
The consultant. What do you call that? We're going to cross over now to our main Africa.
Okay.
That word.
So he was there. So this was a really big deal. And you're all in this little town for a weekend. Now, did you all
What you've got to understand for Clarence Comedy Festival is, have you ever met Rabin Hardooth?
Don't think so.
Because that's the key. Because this is a little guy who's comedy passionate, like it almost to the point of a little bit... too much. He loves comedy. He'll put on a comedy show somewhere at the expense of the comedians who actually have to do the show. Can't you do a show there? He's hired me for shows for 10 people at someone's house where they've sat in the lounge. There's no microphone. There's no spotlight. It's just go to make them laugh. Quite weird. So because he loves comedy so much, he obviously went into Clarence and said, you guys are on a gold mine here with
Dave,
something.
I think he likes money.
There's no money in Clarence, man. There's no money. There's more money at my old age home than Clarence.
So then how the hell did you get such a massive lineup at this Clarence Comedy Festival?
Well, I think the comedians themselves enjoy a little bit of a break at the end of the year. So our, what you call corporate season starts now with emceeing and doing interview function starts now. What is the weird? It's like 4 years ago, there was 12 comedians that were working. Now there's 300 registered comics at that Comics Choice Awards. 300. There's a little bit of a market flood. Wouldn't call them all comedians. Yeah, saturated. But the corporates know, like, if they'll hire young new comics and they realize after 5 minutes that they've made a mistake.
Yeah.
Then they phone me.
And you come in and say things.
We'll do a quiz for the old people.
But now, like, okay, so this whole...
So the Clarence thing isn't a money-making thing because if you consider, say now we did a show at Friends Bar. So Friends Bar is about the size of the studio.
Okay.
They'll get 20, 30, 40 people in there and we do a lineup. So it'll be Luisa, Angel... one of the Goliaths, myself hosting, and then Richard Benoit closing. That's our show, 6 comics. Those 50 people that are there can actually come to the late show, which is at the Grouse and Claret down the road. So you'll see the same people in the audience. So it forces the comedians to come up with a new material, a new show. In fact, the one couple said, they did this at the other place. I'm like, yeah, well, that's festival comedy. It's one of those things. It's not our fault the town's so small.
But Dave, I mean, would this be, does this make you, I don't know if you still get nervous, because I've seen you perform. You're a bit of a mixed bag. You don't really get nervous.
No, even the one venue, we didn't have sound. So the one speaker just decided to stop working. Yeah. So I spoke to the people. I said, chill out. We'll be back now. And then I spoke to them while we were fixing the speaker. That was the best 5 minutes of comedy I ever did.
See, but that's the thing about your comedy is that you have the ability to not go in there with anything and you can do something, or you prepare something and you got like where you're going to go with it. But for such intimate audiences, like, is it, people say, like, when you can hear everyone breathe and it's like you can see everyone by face, like when you do the bigger gigs, that must be a whole lot less sort of nerve-wracking than the small ones, because it's like you're in a team. If you bomb or you pretty cuck that weekend, you just
I was the host, so if I'm bombing, I'll just bring on the next act.
Yeah, okay, but like for the rest of the comedians,
some screamers, they were horrible gigs. The one we went to, they hadn't told the people there was comedy, so that's a big thing. So we had a table of a family who had come there to have their ribs, and they're from the Free State, so they were eating, they had ordered an entire farm, so they had sheep, cow, pig, everything, and there was no salads in sight.
No.
And they
it's
were talking
all brown and beige.
They were talking, so that became what in comedy you get the alpha male, which or alpha female even. Mm-hmm. If it's a drunk person, you can't compete with, because they have no inhibitions and they have no reasoning. So this guy controlled the evening. So he sat there like this massive man, and he just went, no, it's next. One of the worst things you can say to a comedian is next, either next comedian or next joke, whatever he's meaning. Yeah, it's horrible.
That's outrageous.
So Clarence, you don't expect that. You want a nice comedy night. And also, he didn't know there was comedy, and he doesn't know who Lisa Madinga is.
So, this sounds like it was terribly marketed. They're not like street
posters. Welcome to Rubino Dude's passion for comedy.
Because in small towns, you just need a couple of street poll ads, and you can get the job done.
So you just said the word, street poll ads. He was printing flyers an hour before the one show to give to people. So his passion is 90%, and then the marketing is 10% of that. So we're just going to work on it. This is the third one. We'll get there. In fact, Dave Brew might be sponsoring the next year's one, just to get more marketing out, because it's a beautiful place.
Well, it's
the lineup
like
is
it.
Incredible. Those are, I'd say, top comics in South Africa at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to put this into like a big performing venue in the country, it'd be like a really big deal.
Exactly. But the nice thing is that the comedians, we stay in a massive B&B, and it is a chance for us to get together and bitch about the industry. Talk to each other. I don't see Cape Town comics that often. And I don't get to see these comics in a social environment, because we're on stage in different times. I won't see, you know, Luiso does a show at a corporate. I'm not going to see him. So it's good to gather around the campfire and just really, really.
Dave, this sounds like a glorified like comedy boot camp.
Comedy boot camp.
Comedy boot camp in Clarence.
That's exactly what it was. I mean, to sit at a table, if you wanted to record that, Richly Benoit, Martin Evans, Angel, Luiso, myself, at a long table at one of the restaurants, the shit we spoke at that table should have been recorded for any podcast in the world.
Speaking of podcasts, I was saying to Leanne at the start of the show that the Just Like Comedy Show is actually one of our top performers nowadays. I
mean, really?
You guys are putting the work in, firstly.
You know what it is? Half of the thing is convincing people that it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Because they can't figure out that four comedians sitting around a microphone is going to be good. Doesn't matter. On any day. Because if one guy's not hot, the other one will be on fire. So the mix is there. It's just that that podcasting, man, it's a data thing. It's a brain switch. To even tell my mom, like, I'm on a little radio show. Do you want to listen to it?
Yeah, okay, Dave. Let's not get too negative. I was about to say negative really positive things about you.
So I just want more people to know about it.
No, but it is, and it's growing. I mean, look, Dave, you're not going to get thousands.
Street poll ads.
You're not going to get thousands upon thousands of people saying, right, I'm stopping my day because the podcast is on.
Excellent.
But in relative speaking, within what your general catchment area be, your podcast is doing really, really well.
Thank you.
But now, When you're away and you're thinking like, you know, it'd be great to get a guest on, it'd be great to like how do you, what kind of guest do you want in the comedy thing? Like, do you want it just to be, like you said now,
there's two,
like
there's a round two sides table we've chosen. You know, I'd prefer, the comedians are there. So Ryan's there. We've got Richly now, and then we've got Eric. What the best podcast we ever did was people that aren't comedy related. Have a pilot, a vet, two doctors.
But this is the beauty. This is the beauty of comedy. It's not about having to step up and perform and do what you think is comedy, what people think is comedy, like tell jokes and stuff. It's about getting people around, and just, I mean, some of the best shows here on the morning show have just been people talking, and the most outrageous laughter ensues because people are just talking about stuff. You can just be a funny.
It gets quite
person.
Heavy in the comedy sense, because the guys start talking about entitlement and white privilege and apartheid, and then you're like, can we need to break this tension? Mm-hmm. So that's what's cool about having the comics there, because Eric is as dry as ever. Yeah. If you don't know Eric Janssen, young comic, he's been nominated 78 times as for the Comics Choice Awards as a young comic.
He's like, because he started when he was 11. Yeah.
Jeez. So he's been nominated, and he now just says, like, Eric Janssen nominated for, and then he lists his nominations. So that's how, and he'll be 20 next in 4 years' time. So he's just young comic. But I also see that this light in his eyes that I think, damn, I missed that glow of the first comedy things. And now, like, you spoke to me now, I'm like jaded, like, no, hate that gig, hate that guy, no. But so I just see this beautiful warmth and love in his eyes for comedy, and you just want to shake him and go, it's horrible, stop it.
But isn't it quite hard to adapt if you are going there bright-eyed and bushy-tailed? You know, we're talking about depression and anxiety in the first hour today.
But, were we?
Yeah, yes. We were.
Man, sorry, I went to go and see my kid's aunties having a baby at 6 o'clock this morning.
It's not something you always want to go and see.
I wasn't at the business end. They just reeled it in. Okay. They reeled it in. It's quite a big family. So that he went there. And he's his school uniform. He just wants to go to school. And he was like, come see your aunt's baby. And he just really wasn't interested. So that's where I was at 6 o'clock this morning at the clinic somewhere in Linksfield. And I missed the cutoff time. They wheeled it in at 6.
At the umbilical cord.
So the baby's been born now.
Baby's been born. New person's in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nice. And then, and your kid? Just
not. He was born a few years ago, and I wasn't there either.
He wasn't born today.
You can't be there for all your kids' births, especially
you
mine.
You can't. It's a very good point.
I just can't. That's about it.
So what we're saying is about the whole thing about depression, and, you know, like, you will feel jaded, but if you do anything, I mean, you talk to rugby players or cricket players, they feel jaded about playing in front of full stadiums. It's because they've done it so often.
Yeah.
You talk to those Lotharios in the 80s, used to have sex 4 times a day, they also feel jaded.
They feel
what's a Lothario?
Lethargic now.
What's a Lothario?
Lethargic Lotharios. What's that, 50?
Those were the ones at my older time.
There was actually this Italian guy that died last week. He was nicknamed the Mosquito because he was just such a pest. And he said he bedded like 4 women a day for about 20 years straight.
Oh, not as a professional porn star, just a general dude.
No, he was just a general.
So how old was he when he died?
He died at 52.
Oh, that's quite young. But I was imagining this 81-year-old man bedding 4 women a day.
So did he die of a sexual...
Yes, he died while having sex with like a 20-year-old woman.
That's my limit.
It was in a tomato field, whatever. It was in an old Mitsubishi, apparently. And he
could
died.
He be allergic to tomatoes?
No, he just died doing what he loved. Like, he was always around younger women, but he was such a pest. But he was that sort of like cliched Lothario that it was just always around.
But then he was
around.
Still getting action, even though he was a pest.
Yes, but that's the whole thing, because, you know, obviously people would go to Europe for the European summers, and that was his jaw. Like, he was like the town sex post.
That all the dogs weed on.
For a word.
Exactly. It's for this dude.
But he wasn't called the Mosquito because of his size. It was just, it's the pest size.
It's because you could never, just couldn't shake this guy. He was always around. He was always, in his younger days, when he was like, kind of still like shy, he would compensate for his shyness by just being overzealous towards things. And he was always all over the woman.
Oh, he sounds charming.
Well, he looked even more charming. I've forgotten what his name is now, but yeah, he died and he was 52, but he died having sex.
In a tomato field.
Yeah. I don't know how this ties.
Some guys live the dream.
I don't know how this ties in with depression, but I was saying, like, adapting to these kind of things. And to be a good comedian, you've got to be a pretty hard, rugged bastard like you are.
The thing is that on the inside, when I spoke to, we were talking about this to the comics.
So inside, you're dead.
On the inside, we're soft and squishy, and we do get offended easily. So I was talking to Angel, and we were talking about, I said, you've got a really thick skin lately.
That's Angel Campy. Now she,
Angel Campy. So she's voted one of the, Campy. Angel Campy.
Well, now I learned something.
There's no PH in there, Stephen. So she's in one of the, in the Mail and Guardian now, as one of 200 young South Africans.
I like her. I interviewed her once. She's very cool.
We were talking about that, and I said, like, your skin's gotten harder, would you call it? It's Clarence. It's terrible in the winter there.
Yes.
But she said, no, actually, she's even, because she's more out in more things, so she's got a radio show now, she's got a few other things, it's almost, her skin's even softer because she really is being bombarded by more things.
Mm.
As a young woman, as a comic, as all these things. And I said, well, you're putting on a good show, because it looks like you've become tougher. And it's in your comedy as well. Because if you get heckled, it can really get you later.
Sure.
Someone says something, especially if they're personal about it. And then it gets you. Because a lot of your comedy is really your heart and your sleeve. You're saying, I feel about this.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, it has
to be. It has to be because you're a comic more than you're doing comedy a lot of the time, because it's about you on the stage as a performer.
It's and not, the sincerity is what works.
Exactly. It's not about doing a line of words. And I mean, you can take the best comedy routine ever, take the script of that, right? And you get out on stage and try to do that. It's like
you're reading a script.
You can't be a cover comedian, so to speak. You yourself, you've always got to be authentic and genuine and real.
There was the guy that was here now recently that went and saw, I can't remember his name, but he did a 2-hour show, and he did an extra show at the Monte Cassino, at that arena, whatever it's called, the big one. To fill that up.
Teatro,
yeah. He did that for a third show. The critics still said, no, this is a paint by numbers comedian, whatever it is. But you don't fill the teatro for 3 nights being a paint by numbers comedian.
No.
He's still sincere. Exactly. It's just that his stuff is quick fire. You know, that's the other thing.
But that's great.
His bloody name. Help me.
But that's still his thing, though. Jimmy Carr.
It's Jimmy Carr.
Yeah.
And people were, and they love coming there. And he loves getting heckled. And he was just brilliant. Mm. But some South Africans have not learned how to heckle yet.
Yeah, because it becomes so personal, it's immature, and
they heckle at home, and they wait for the audience to be quiet so they can shout out their thing. So it's completely mistimed, because he's really just waiting for the audience to be quiet so he can shout biscuit box or whatever, because he's thought about this thing the whole day. And when I go to Jimmy Carr, I'm going to shout this thing. So it wasn't relevant, it didn't make sense, and then Jimmy Carr just goes, South Africans are idiots. Because a good heckle is brilliant. It can bring the house down.
Well, it's part of the show almost.
It is part of the show.
And when you watch that...
In the States, well, especially in England, it's the great hecklers. Hecklers are... They're good at what they do. And they understand the concept of it. They don't heckle to the point where the show's a mess.
Yeah.
They give you the stuff. And you even got 5 minutes to riff on it.
But if you look at just civilization, using the British as an example, obviously Jimmy Carr's from there, is that when you're British, you grow up in a pub.
Yes,
that's the whole thing.
Your banter's around that stuff.
You talk about drunk uncles. You got drunk cousins. Everyone's kind of drunk, and that's why the Irish are so funny, and that's why they swear so much, because they've always been in this drinking environment where everyone has got this open but banter.
It is. Inhibitions are gone. Stuff.
Yeah, it's open banter, so that people know when, because comedy's a lot about timing as well. Yeah. Speak about this guy with biscuit box. There's no timing there.
I struggled in England with that because I thought I had to do my set, and they wanted that organic thing where they want to talk about the thing. Have you ever been on the bus? Then they want to go, yes, we were. I was on the bus today. That will come from the audience member.
Exactly, because it's an actual thing. It's like a granite kind of moving thing is comedy for them. It's not like this delivery and then reaction, because that's very stale.
That's very theatrical. We come from a theatre background. We come from a great storytelling background, South Africans. Mm-hmm. We campfire braai stories. The funniest people I ever met was in the army.
Yeah.
Who didn't have they didn't know they were funny. And they just sit there giggling because they firstly mess up English, partly. They know bigger words. But to just meet these dudes, they're 18 years old Afrikaans dudes in this environment, and they were very, very funny. But they can't translate that onto stage.
Of course not.
It's of very course not.
No, no, because it goes back to talk about culture. You don't want to be seen as arrogant or showy, because the genuine showmanship has been bred out of people in this country a lot of the time too. Because in an Afrikaans community, you don't want to be seen as vinkat.
Yes.
That's like the worst thing you want to be. So you can't go up there and be the big performer.
Have you had Jonathan on the show? Jonathan? I don't know what his name is. Jonathan. Jonathan.
No, Dave.
Very funny Afrikaans comedian. But
try a different way of saying it.
Jonathan. Very big YouTuber dude. And he plays into that. He plays into the fact that Afrikaans culture is not shy, but that the Vinkat thing, so he does that. That's his character. He's like this dude, wears his cap sideways, does this stuff, and he plays on that. So it's unexpected things that he's saying.
We'll get back to some more comedy in a bit, but I've got to ask you, because one of the most disturbing pictures that I saw this year was you on John T. Searle's sex show, Naked. There was you.
Oh, boy.
and then Ryan, who's also on the show with you, he got somehow smuggled into it. So, Leanne, you haven't been here on Friday, so... Fridays are kind of cool here on the show because we finish and then we go out there. There's Dave and his team, and they're always just really loose of lip.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about stuff. And then I was joking to Eric that it's John T's sex show today, and they're doing the nude show. So he has to do this, because this is why this guy's going to get ahead in comedy if he whoops his kid off. And Eric, being the young, like, you know, happy guy, he was like, no, I'm never going to do it. It's like, screw you, Eric. You don't want comedy enough, do you? You just don't want success. And I was giving him gears about this. So then Ryan is also on Dave's show. He was like, nah, I'd never do it. Anyway, John T comes in, I leave. And then I see on social media, Dave naked, Ryan's now naked.
Gareth says, every time I go away, this place goes to the dogs.
Are these blinds down in this case?
Probably
were. Blinds are down, but also Ryan did it in terms of, he had a personal reason for doing it because he had gone through some stuff. So not any sexually related thing, but
body,
mind and body issues and
body
things.
Dysmorphia.
And he did it, and he felt a little bit, what's the word? It would be, there was a freedom, and there was a bit of a barrier that had fallen away from doing that. So he actually did it more for sort of his own reasons.
Do you guys sit on these very chairs?
We put
chairs?
Towels on there.
Oh, towels, okay. Just checking.
But that very chair, I wasn't there. That was maybe Tamar was there, and there was another lady here called Lee, and I was in this chair.
Okay, you're just examining it now.
I mean, consider that everyone sits in this chair is naked. You know, there's only a layer of jean pant.
That's true.
That keeps you from the fluids.
In a brook, yeah.
And you don't know what people do in their homes. But it was liberating, I suppose, is the word for Ryan. And let me just say, for Ryan has nothing to be shy of.
Mm.
He's in good shape.
How much time did you spend looking at either
well, you don't
his cock
look,
or Jonty's
you don't look
cock?
At the other
I know,
things.
I know you don't want
Jonty was where you are, so, and he's quite he's not as tall as you. So yours I can see from here. I can see your belt. But Jonty was maybe had his chair lower. There was no sight.
Just didn't want to
see
show
the little Jonty. And Jonty T.
And did you feel vulnerable?
Did
being,
I feel it? No.
Did you feel vulnerable being naked in the studio? With
you
Jonty?
Know what was nice is that you should do it more often. It's not the air conditioner was on, so there was a nip in the air. There was a nip.
Well, I'm sure there were a couple of nips.
Couple of nips in the air.
After 2 minutes, not even longer than that, you start talking like we're talking in podcast land. Just having a rap with someone, the doors are closed, you're sitting, and your subject matter was then there. The whole thing with those taboos, that's what he spoke about. He said, what is it about being naked that's still, in 2018, still taboo?
Mm.
And once we had started speaking about that, we moved on to other subjects. But before we knew it, we were talking about nothing to do with sexuality. It were just personal things.
Would you ever do naked comedy?
I don't know about naked comedy because you're moving around and then you'd be distracting people.
Yeah, but I mean, if
I think for Ryan and I, because there were some sexual discussions about things, and I think Ryan and I are both just thinking about Margaret Thatcher naked and dead cats or something to not get a semi. That was what you're thinking of. But then again, I spoke to Jonty after. He said, "You know what? It would be natural if you did because we are speaking about sexual related things." So I think naked comedy. I would want the audience to be naked too. So
exactly. It wouldn't just be you at the Goliath
I would
Comedy
want the audience.
Club with
it's
your
It's actually happening
house,
on
yeah.
Wednesday, the 8th of November.
Oh, really?
Naked comedy show at my house.
But Dave, you know you get those nudist kind of colonies or parks. There's one in Pretoria.
There's a market there for me.
Called like Sunny Side or something, Sunny Ridge, Sunny Bum.
Like, then I don't know if the comedy would be wanted there because really people want to be chilled and they want to do their own thing.
Yeah,
so now they'd have to come together in the hall.
But Dave, it's an expression.
The hall.
Dave, it's an expression
Yo,
thing.
Yo, hall.
It's an expression thing either yeah. way.
Well, I'd be keen to see which comedian actually would do that because I just don't think it's the right environment because it's possibly, those are family nudists. So there's kids in the audience and things and comedy's kind of like adults. So you'd have to separate the kids from the adults. It'd be quite a logistical nightmare.
I just think it'd be a fascinating niche. That if you, I mean, look, you're speaking about this guy, he's not even printing
Can
flyers.
Can I do open mic? Can I do 5 minutes?
You're speaking about this guy, he's not even printing flyers, and he's taking you to Clarence for...
Might as well do that.
But imagine, Dave, if you were to pioneer naked comedy.
I'm sure there is.
No, but
there's been two or three comedians that have been... We tried to do comedy, and we were booked for a long time ago to do comedy at a strip club in Benoni. It's called the Pomona Spur. And you do the comedy in between... So at the lunchtime, the last... act would be on stage, the pole dancer, and then you would do like 20 minutes of comedy, and there'd be another one, and then you'd do another 5 o'clock set, and you'd get like a grand for the day. So you're making the same amount as the stripper. But the guys in the club don't want to see you. That was the key marketing failure, because they were there to see the dancing on the pole, and you're like, hey, isn't it funny when the escalator goes faster than the rail? You know what I mean? They were like, huh? You know, so it didn't work. So I think it's very important for comedy to be in the right place. For people to say, so many times we go to these restaurants and the guy says, oh, we got comedy night. I said, have you told the people in the restaurant the main thing? Oh, no, just get the mic there and do it. And if a guy's there with his girlfriend in the front
and he
row,
doesn't want that,
he's there to either break up with her or it's a romantic evening. And you're saying, hey, how you doing? Where are you from? How long have you guys been together? Eh? And he's like, please piss off. So now you've made him angry. He hates comedy now.
Yeah.
So that didn't work in the strip club. And then there was, in fact, one or two comedians that did a comedy set at a swingers club. I won't say who.
Okay.
Well, you won't say who you saw in the audience.
That means you're clothed and the other people are doing things. But they wanted the happiness. They said, come do a comedy set at our special private club. So now you're on stage talking, and there's people banging each other.
Jeepers.
Are kids at school yet?
the kids are always at school. No, they're always on holidays.
They are now. Maybe learning some stuff. Jeepers, but I would never do that gig. That's not easy.
Sounds hard.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sounds very hard.
Difficult, not hard. But he did it. And you know what? I think the thing was he bombed. And then he said, well, hang on a minute. How many other comedians have done that? So what are you comparing it to? If I bombed in the club, I'd say yes, I'm not doing my job. Sure. You bomb in that situation, you did it, you did your 20 minutes, you tried your best, you did your stuff. You are going to bomb. There's certain comedy clubs where you're going to have a tough time. But it doesn't mean you're a horrible comic.
No, exactly. And that will build you anyway. So who's on the show today?
On the show today is Dalen Oliver. Dalen Oliver just came off a nice one-man show at the Baxter. It's hard to fill that Baxter. He did it for a month, just under a month. And he did his show there. So he's a young comic. Yeah, to fill that. It's a Baxter studio or the Baxter, the big one, not the studio, the hall.
Yeah, no, I've been there.
So Dalen Oliver used to be a teacher. He's a cricket fan, loves his sport, and he's gone into comedy. And I'd say he's a young comic, but I'd say he hasn't been doing comedy for a long time. He's not a young man.
Not a young man like Eric Janssen.
Eric Janssen's 12. He's getting pubes next year.
That's amazing. But it's amazing that Eric has bypassed school in order to pursue his comedy. And
you do. He's just got one note that says, Eric can't come back to school today. He's doing comedy. Eric, he just takes that to school.
Isn't that school today?
Eric won't be at school. Well, my kid might not be at school because his auntie had a baby.
Yeah.
But Dalen Oliver's here. And then there is someone else joining us for the life of me. I cannot remember, but I'll look on my Instagram.
Well, he'll be
Well, there. That's the other thing is like we've gone into a bit of a more of a social media thing where all the guys on the show have to do posts and do the things, which has become part of the deal of how this thing works.
Which is way
the funniest man in the world can be there, but he's not on social media.
Yeah, which is how it should be, really.
It shouldn't be because it's hard work, man. Ben, I can't do it.
No. Dave, no. we got George Meany coming in to wrap the show up as per usual with the world of motoring. Is there anyone you actually follow on social media that you like in a comedy sense? Because again, it's like
to give some perspective on Twitter or on Twitter.
Well, like Instagram is generally probably the best social media platform.
No, not for comedy. It's quick. Instagram is like literally a pick or an idea, whereas Twitter is a conversation with. And you really do get into the comedy thoughts, stuff.
But like, do you find that there's comedians who are using the platforms pretty well?
Not that make me laugh out loud or giggle. They are my friends. I mean, I'll follow all the comics that have been on this show. I follow them. And they are every now and then there's a thing that grabs you, especially with the little story movie things. I mean, Snapchat have now got scripted movies 4 times a day. They've gone into their sort of pay-per-view things. Have you seen that?
No, I'm not on that Snapchat.
That's the next way. People lose money in these old forms. So DVDs.
Yeah,
when you see a comedian making a DVD, you're looking at, why are you doing this? So now Snapchat have got this HBO kind of platform. So you subscribe to that thing. So one's a soapy, but it's only for 3 or 4 minutes. But it's 4 times a day. So you'll get your notification because you paid for it and you want to know, what happened to Jane?
Mm.
Is she married? Or how does John? Did he
die? All American content.
Those American content, but South Africans aren't onto it yet. And the pioneers, once again, unfortunately, are the porn industry because they're the ones who got screwed when the internet came.
They really did, yeah. They absolutely did.
The
problem with the internet is that the budgets in porn just fell through the floor straight away.
But the content was still being made by the old school. So the high-gloss content was made by them. That's that Butterfly Effect podcast that you, I think, Dory told me to listen to.
Okay.
Joe Rogan is still... he has great guests. He might not be this crazy great comedian, and he tours a lot, but his guests are fantastic. They really are opinionated. He gets the guys. He gets the proper ones in. I mean, that was the Elon Musk was smoking a joint on his one.
Yeah.
So just that's the other thing about these podcasts is be the thing and then get crazy guests. Are you doing that now?
Well, like he does that. He does that really well. Yeah, we got George coming in now. George, sorry, I would help you with the headphones, but we're very low on stuff.
I untangled mine.
I'm trying to make as little noise as I can.
Oh no, go ahead,
George. Right. George is here. I saw someone putting a picture of their new car.
Yeah, it's fine. It is plugged
on Instagram. So she said, "This is my new car," and she was standing next to it with the number plate on. Would it be advisable to blur out that number plate? Why do people do that?
I don't think it matters.
Who has access to that information? Can I find out where she lives?
Not you as the public. So you're not gonna easily get access to a database of of, you know, personal information based on number plates.
Who has that information? R2?
Well, some businesses that operate, and then mostly R2. The database exists inside eNatus, so that's where it is. So whoever's
people blurring out the, like, I got a new car for Christmas and they blur out the number plate. That's just arrogance.
No,
you don't know who I am, but I'm on Instagram.
I suppose it's less about somebody getting access to your information, and more about if they identify the car in the street. Okay. I know who that is.
Okay, but then in Natal, every guy's got his number plate, got his name on there.
Yeah, no, I don't know if that's a good
idea. What's that story?
I don't like that.
As soon as I arrived, as soon as you get over Marion Hill Toll Plaza, every car's got a green. There's the names. Jane.
I think it's okay. I think it's a KZN thing.
Is it a KZN thing?
It's a KZN thing.
Because you know what's nice is that you can, can concentrate your road rage. You can actually say, "Janet, you drive like an idiot," and it's like, "How do you know my name?"
Well, we're gonna get into the road rage in a few minutes, but
I stole your guest. That's the only chance I get to get information
on number plates.
It's okay.
No, I have more questions. Is a caravan registered as a trailer or a car? It's got the word "car" in it. Caravan. It's not a trailer. Is it a trailer? Come on.
You make the most interesting connections. The most interesting connections.
That's my brain. It's busy synapsing now as you speak. I can see it in my. I've got ADD and I'm probably dyslexic.
Those neurons work overtime in there.
So, what is a caravan?
What's a caravan?
No.
The thing you.
It's a trailer.
It's a tortoise on wheels.
But it doesn't have an engine. But have you ever seen those caravans when someone pulls off, then it starts going by itself,
yes,
down through the trailer park.
Well, there's a. I mean, I don't know if you know the laws around trailers, but
I don't know the laws around trailers.
Anything under, I think it's 500 kilograms. So if the gross mass of the trailer, including its load, is under 500 kilograms, the trailer doesn't have to have brakes. So the car brakes the trailer.
Okay. Right.
Okay, and I think you get some caravans under 500 kilos.
This one's 600, the one I'm speaking about.
Which means that that's a dangerous situation.
So those hydraulics have to be linked to your car? How do they do that?
No, so it works on the tow hitch. So as the tow hitch, kind of the G-forces work, so the
how do you know this shit?
How do I know this shit?
Oh.
I don't know, I just do.
You're a car man.
And you aren't allowed to have a passenger in the trailer while you're driving, right?
No. And you can't, that mosquito can't have sex in the back with his tomatoes.
No, and unless you're crossing a border, then you can have three people in the floor.
In the back underneath the...
Yes, of if course. You're in a movie from Dusk Till Dawn, for instance.
Okay, Dave, enough.
I'm in the mood now. No, to talk about
caravans. He'll get into this. He'll get into this.
George arrived here with many pertinent car things to share with us today. He didn't want to talk about caravans.
I didn't bring notes.
Huh?
I didn't bring notes. You should have told me. I would have brought notes.
Because you got ADD.
And another thing about caravans. Don't you think tomatoes look like a bum? Are you with me?
Tomatoes.
Peaches more. Peaches look more
like a bum. All right, George.
Look what he did.
Back to you.
Look what he did. Okay, so BMW. BMW. People have been asking BMW, are you going to bring out a double cab? You know the Mercedes-Benz double cab.
Yes, of course. That's the, what's it called?
X.
The X. Yes, the Mercedes-Benz X-Class. So especially Australia. Australia want a BMW Bucky badly. And
Ute.
I'm pretty sure. So
can you take an X5 and convert it in Kempton?
Yeah, you can with an angle grinder. But
it would kind of be the same chassis, the same base,
yes, right? Yes, as an SUV. So BMW have now officially confirmed they're not going to compete with that Mercedes-Benz X.
Fiat like brought out a brand. Bucky.
A good one, too.
A fullback.
Well, they say the market's just too small.
But also, stick to your core principles, you know, performance, efficiency, those kind of things. We don't need another Bucky in this world. Like, there's enough.
Exactly.
Think about Merck is they'll make anything. If people had to say, I really want the Barbie car, and if people made sense around it, they would release the Barbie series.
Exactly. So, and the market will be so small that it'll cost them more money to make the bloody thing.
Merck's product range is just insanely wide.
The thing is, in a BMW Bucky, do you still not have to indicate?
Don't know. Not in Durban. Anyway, top three reasons why people curse behind the wheel. Now, believe it or not, in Britain, according to a Hyundai study, foul-mouthed Brits curse every 2.5 miles or every 4 kilometers. Researchers polled this across 2,000 people and found that Brits typically swear 41 times during a 160-kilometer trip.
Wow.
I wonder what South Africa is. I'd love to do this poll. And typically motorists commute 596 kilometers to and from work during an average month, and in the process curse 152 times, which is about 7.5 times a day in traffic.
It's so annoying being a passenger in a car with a driver.
Like that, yes.
Who's upset about every little thing. Oh, now look, now he's stopping. Of course he's going forward. You know, it's just really irritating. We're all in the same position. Just drive and relax.
Exactly.
So 7.2 times a day, though.
I think my kid has learned to swear from watching me drive.
Yeah, I think a lot of people learn to swear from driving.
But I do say nincompoop.
Okay.
Because the word comes out, then you want to say, person driving. Look at this person driving.
I just let people go. Do whatever you want. I don't care. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm not going to get my blood pressure up for
I've had my moments where they've got me at the wrong time. Yeah. And I get out my car.
You get out the car. You can get shot for doing that.
Yeah, ooh. I know.
So but you got to stay in the...
It happened
in your lane.
It's dangerous.
Where I got out the car and I actually smacked their window with my hand and they were trying to drive away and they were stalling.
I suppose, you know, for a woman to do it is a little bit less dangerous than for a guy to do it because I think...
There'd be testosterone and it would be a fight. I shouted at someone littering once and I got shouted at for shouting at them. But I just picked up the stuff and put it in my car. I'll take it for you.
Now there, I've stopped the car, got out the car. We were in slow traffic in Cape Town and a kid threw a piece of paper out the back. I stopped the car, had passengers, got out, walked to the window, picked up a piece of paper and said, "You dropped this."
Nice.
So that's nice. You dropped this.
Oh, would you like it?
You may or may not have been listening.
And then the mother was sitting in the front. She didn't even bat an eyelid. And she just went, "Don't throw your things for the outside of the car." And that was that. Got back in my car.
My correction, you would have been stabbed in that situation.
Probably. But let's get on to the fuel-efficient cars that I promised from last week.
Yes, thank you, George.
So it's the manufacturers aren't trying to be devious, but they do game the system a little bit when it comes to the stats that they put on the fuel consumption of cars.
I mean, never believe them, any of them when I read those things.
Yeah, they do. They tune the cars to its maximum. And nothing wrong with that, and it doesn't lie, but it's not in normal driving conditions. Exactly. And so those statistics are slightly off. So what we've done is I've pulled out a list of cars here that we've actually tested, Auto Trader's tested in real life conditions. Yeah. So the Suzuki Swift, and so if you put in context, the average car probably does about 10 liters to 100 k's.
Okay.
Yeah, because we said fuel costs are rising last week. What cars can consumers buy that are more fuel efficient? So if you contextualize or anchor the average at around 10 liters per 100 k's, the Suzuki Swift and Suzuki Ignis gets 5 liters to 100 k's, half that.
That's brilliant.
That's brilliant. And then the remarkable thing about this car is that even if you drive it like a bat out of hell, you won't change that fuel consumption by more than about 10%.
That's incredible.
So, brilliant car for fuel consumption. The next one is
fully loaded with people.
No, that's probably average with two people in it.
Yeah.
The Renault Captur. Mm-hmm. It's a turbo diesel engine. Also gets about 5 liters per 100, and also has the same characteristics. You can drive it like a bat out of hell, and it doesn't change the fuel consumption much.
But that's a slightly. I mean, the Ignis is a very small car.
Yeah.
So I get that. The Captur's a bit bigger than that.
Yeah, but it's got a turbo diesel, so I think the turbocharger helps with the size of the car. The Suzuki Celerio. Mm-hmm. Celerio. It's a tiny little car and gets 4 liters per 100 k's.
Wow.
Which is even better. But this engine has to work quite hard because it's a three cylinder. Mm-hmm. To get the car going. And then a car that's probably more popular is the Ford Fiesta TDCi. Mm-hmm. It's not the fastest of the Fiestas, but it also gets 4 liters per 100 k's.
This is very useful.
And it'll break into the 5 liter per 100 k's, but also, you know, these little cars that you can't seem to push their fuel consumption up much because they just don't have the power. And then the Renault Kwid also does 4 liters per 100 k's. So those are the petrol cars. And then we said we would talk about hybrids.
Yeah.
So there are a number of hybrids in South Africa. I don't think people know about hybrids. But the thing about a hybrid is you can't get this kind of fuel consumption on highway driving at high speed. Mm-hmm. The car automatically switches to the petrol petrol engine, and the Toyota Prius is the is almost the definition of a hybrid in South Africa and around the world. And for short commutes, you know, short trips in traffic, this car gets 1.7 liters per 100 k's.
Yeah, that is.
But they must tell you before that you got a rental, if you've never had one, there is a little training course you need to do. And I didn't get that at my rental place because it started it stopped on the highway because it was something that I wasn't doing.
Oh, wow.
So you must learn your Prius. Don't think when you land your plane at Avis and go, hey, I'll take a Prius because I'm cool. There has to be there's no clutch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's automatic. But there was something that it did and it just started slowing down on the highway. And she said, oh, okay, do this thing with the thing. Didn't they tell you? No. At 120, they didn't tell me. But it was so scary having that Prius. And then you think, what? I can't push start it. There's no one. Yeah. It can only be towed. Then it became a trailer.
Or a caravan. And then the Volvo T8. So the Volvo T8 all Volvos are really nice cars. It's big and heavy. But it also has the hybrid engine. Another hybrid is the BMW 330e, which is an electric assistance to allow fuel-free driving. So what it does is you can drive with no fuel. You can switch the engine off for about 30 or 40 k's.
So that's kind of like the i8, though.
Yeah.
It'll be a similar kind of system. It's got the ability to go full electric.
Yes.
But ultimately, you're going to be still driving it.
Where do golf carts fit into that range?
It doesn't.
Really?
No.
Can it not go on the road?
No.
Because golf carts are the future, man.
No, they're not.
They're not.
Yeah. Golf carts are dreadful, even on golf courses.
They fall over so easily.
At golf days, mostly. So golf carts not in there?
No. Golf carts definitely not in here. I don't even think a golf cart's allowed on the road.
The hybrid.
And then there are only two noteworthy electric cars in South Africa, fully electric cars, and that's the BMW i3 and the Nissan Leaf. Mm-hmm. The Nissan Leaf is the probably cheaper one and set to become the more popular one because the new version is going to come out shortly. But the problem with the current models is they only do 120 to 150 kilometers in range.
But something that maybe we'll know this time next year, we can recap on this, but with urban lives being what they are, this petrol price isn't exactly going to go down.
No.
I mean, do you see these cars becoming quite prominent, or is South African motoring ego such that they'll never really kind of go to this level? You know, like that Suzuki Ignis. If that was a toy car, you gave it to your kid, you'd be like, oh, it looks kind of cool, but will a grown male, like a grown South African man, get into an Ignis?
Probably not. I don't think so. I mean, right now, from our site, the hybrids are not popular.
Yeah.
That could change with consumer pressure, but it's definitely not popular.
Where do you buy a Nissan Leaf in terms of, are there special dealerships? You wouldn't buy it at the normal Nissan dealership.
Yeah.
Is it there?
Yeah.
You don't see them though. Where do you charge it?
It's a plug-in car, so you can charge it at your house.
But you need a special socket because it had quite a massive.
It's got adapters.
Is it?
Yeah.
Jeez,
yeah.
Can you imagine? Like in the old days, has anyone got a BlackBerry adapter? Now you're going to go and say, has anyone got a Nissan adapter?
Otherwise, I got to walk.
And why has Toyota not gone into the other big brands in electric?
Well, I think the whole world and all the manufacturers are doing this. It's just our market doesn't get it. Our market doesn't get the cars because. There's no demand for it. Well, there's little demand for it. Maybe with the fuel price now.
And also, it's just as expensive as petrol.
And
the upfront cost is extreme with electric cars. I'd buy a Nissan Leaf, but I'm waiting for the Tesla.
But then you get a Nissan Leaf with a trailer with a generator in it. Now I'm thinking. See, the trailer thing was
good question. Really sorry that Dave should be here this week.
That's all right. I like that.
So sorry we've run out of time.
We actually have.
We haven't. We went 3 minutes over. What are you guys playing now? Some old episode.
What else we got there, George? That is.
That's it.
That's it for the week.
That's it.
All right. Of course, you can catch Auto Central right here on cliffcentral.com. And George, what are you on social media? People often do ask about you.
At George Meany.
Just at George Meany.
My name and surname.
Simple as that. George is very active. He does, of course, share all the letters from the world of motoring. And you can catch him here every Friday. Otherwise, catch the show. Dave,
Can I? So I can ask George questions directly on Twitter
afterwards. Do whatever you need to do. I'm signing you out. Catch the Just Now pod, Just Now comedy show. That'll be on when's that, Dave?
It's today, 9:10.
You meant to say Just Now.
Oh, sorry. Jeez, I don't know.
You get your own strap. All right, Leanne, thank you for joining us. All right, Nolo, thank you, George. See you next week, and of course, the show will be back on Monday. Gareth will be away still for a few more days because he's in New York, but you get the delights of me and Leanne and Nolo and Sia. CliffCentral.com.